Attempt blocked by McNabb to the right circle. A try. Kick save Hill. Rebound. Another try. Save Hill. A third try. Save. And the rebound to the right corner.
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Bob boots it ahead. Sticks it left. Barbashev in. Back to the right. A shot. Score. Marchessault. 19 seconds in.
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at LVSportsNetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Monday, and the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. The Vegas Golden Knights defeat the Detroit Red Wings 5-3 over the weekend. Vegas snaps a four-game losing streak, and it's their first victory in over a month inside T-Mobile Arena. And then naturally, they're on the road for a pair of games. You've got Seattle and Calgary coming up Tuesday and Thursday this week. And then the Golden Knights return home on St. Patrick's Day. It's an early game on St. Patrick's Day Sunday against the New Jersey Devils. So at the top of the show, I asked the question, what do you need to see from the Golden Knights over the final 18 games to believe that they can repeat as champions, that they can go back-to-back? I open up the phone lines. Text line is always open, 702-876-1340. If you want to answer that, submit to the text line. We'll get to that a little bit later on as well. But Chris Chapman, I was encouraged by a couple of things that I saw against Detroit. The first of which has nothing to do with what happened on the ice and everything to do with how the Golden Knights lined up in that game. So often we talk about defending as a defense-only problem, right? So often we look at this team, and if they allow 5, 6, 7 goals a night, or they go through the stretch that they did prior to really the last two games against Vancouver and Detroit, we look at it as the six defensemen, that's where the issue is. And so often in hockey, it's about so much more than just your defensemen. It's all five guys on the ice plus the goaltender, right? You have opportunities to, as Bruce Cassidy says, put out fires all over the ice. Your wingers can do it. Your center icemen can do it. Your defensemen can do it. And the last line of resort, the last opportunity that you can use to put out a fire is your goaltending. And so often we discount the roles of the forwards in team defense. And I'm not even going to go so far as to talk about wingers specifically. I'm talking about center icemen. There is so much more responsibility in the defensive zone for a center than there is for a winger. And for the Golden Knights to have the luxury for the first time in quite some time, have all four of their center icemen in the lineup slotted where we expect them to be if and when everyone's healthy, Tomas Hertl not included in that, the Golden Knights looked better in all three zones, not just defensively, but in the neutral zone, on the forecheck. You can line up your centers the way that they did. Jack Eichel, Chandler Stephenson, William Karlsson, Nick Waugh. When you can do that, then everything else for this team kind of falls into place.
Yeah, I mean, look, the reality is this team has had issues with continuity over the last, well, I mean,
it's been 51 games.
Yeah. So having the same players in the lineup, and now you've had Anthony Mantha in there for a couple games. Noah Hanifin's been in there for a couple games, and you could already see the difference a guy like Noah Hanifin makes. But that continuity, look, I got a little nervous. Obviously, in the third period, we watched Zach Whitecloud be carried down the tunnel, and you see something like that, and you're like, oh, great. Here we go again. Mm-hmm. Here we go again. But fortunately, it seems like Whitecloud is okay. Probably just took a shot in a rough spot. And you know, the most important thing is, aside from the continuity aspect, is you have to build something. Mm-hmm. And in order to build something, you have to be consistent. And consistency starts with familiarity, I believe. And it's not to say that these guys aren't familiar with each other, but when things are constantly being mixed up, it's hard to gain that familiarity because, yeah, you know that guy, but if you haven't played with them for 3-4 months, the timing is something that you have to work on. The chemistry is something that you may have to rebuild. We haven't seen an issue with Jack, Jonathan, and Ivan Barbashev.
Mm-hmm.
But the other guys, you know, you're mixing things up. And it seemed like you're mixing things up all season. So it's encouraging to see that, certainly. It's encouraging to see what you hope is your top six going into the playoffs. I'm sure Ben Hutton and Alec Martinez will certainly want to get in games and have an opportunity to maybe reclaim a spot in the lineup. But aside from that, I love what I'm seeing from Noah Hanifin. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you see why he was a coveted player at the deadline. He's a difference maker. I think it was Rick mentioned the small little play that he made leading to one of the goals. He had another assist on the empty net goal for Jonathan Marchessault.
Yep.
Look, him, Shea Theodore, Alec Pietrangelo, and then you get the goal from Brayden McNabb. And we don't talk about it a lot, but Brayden McNabb has a sneaky good shot, and it was on display there.
It's not even just the shot.
It's the fact that he had all that space and time.
He has good offensive instincts.
And you could see, when you see a goal like that, you see why he was a guy who scored a ton of points in juniors.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So Noah Hanifin, let's start there and move our way to different places. Again, I contend if you have Eichel, Stevenson, Carlson, Waugh down the middle, this team's going to be fine. They're going to gain traction. They're going to find their game. I just believe that. Wholeheartedly, I do. You haven't had it for a long time now. I think now that you've got it, it's going to be fine. Now we talk about Noah Hanifin. The impact that this player has had in two games for the Vegas Golden Knights is noticeable. You see it. And we're not even in a period where we're going to like legitimately evaluate him and what he can do for this hockey club. Where do you put Noah Hanifin in terms of the defensive depth chart? Because to me, it's pretty clear. He is somewhere in between Alex Pietrangelo and Shea Theodore.
Yeah, I don't think we're splitting hairs with that one because you look at where he plays, and he fits perfectly alongside Pietrangelo. You know, he's good on the power on the power play, obviously. So it gives you flexibility, I think, if you want to, if Bruce does want to mix things up. I don't foresee him mixing things up, though. Like, I think where he's at now is where you slot him in.
Now, there are going to be moments inside of games. Because, contrary to popular belief, even if the Golden Knights gain traction, they will be trailing in games.
Yes.
It's what happens in the National Hockey League.
And you want your offensive players out there.
And before we go any further, I know there was a lot of discourse last week about how could the Golden Knights lose to both Columbus and Buffalo. Edmonton lost to both Columbus and Buffalo.
Yeah.
It happens in this league. There are no easy games. But there is a break in case of emergency pairing that you can use if you're Bruce Cassidy. When you need more offense, Noah Hanifin, Shea Theodore, that becomes your go-to pair to try to hem teams in and find a tying goal, a goal to change momentum, whatever you need in that moment. If you are trailing, you go to that pair and you go to them to try to spark something.
Yeah, but I mean, it's funny, right? You mentioned the Buffalo and Edmonton mm-hmm. and Columbus thing. And look, credit to both Buffalo and Columbus for not throwing it in and still playing hard, despite the fact that their seasons are over. But getting back to the options you have, there's certainly going to be times when you're trailing. And we've heard Bruce say time and time again, when you're trailing, you're going to have your offensive D-men out there a little bit more to try to create a little bit of a spark, try to get that comeback going. And having the option of Theodore and Hanifin and mm-hmm. Pietrangelo being able to interchange the three of them, it's a good problem to have. You know, and look, I think if there's moments where you have to play McNabb with Hanifin, you like that as well, because certainly you have a guy who's responsible defensively, but does have a little bit of offense in his game if he needs to display it. But generally, you're hoping that those options or those moments where you're playing your offensive D-men mm-hmm. more than you want to are few and far between.
Noah Hanifin's play on Jonathan Marchessault's goal is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's set up for it's set up in a couple of ways. Defensemen's gaps are often predicated on whether or not they have forwards reloading in the neutral zone correctly. If you have smart back pressure, you have the ability as a defenseman to stand up and make a play, to, quote, kill a play, if you will. That's the vernacular. That's what Bruce Cassidy talks about. He uses. The thing I notice about Noah Hanifin, really over the first two games, he has a desire to kill plays faster. Now, that's not to take anything away from anybody else, Shea Theodore, Alex Petrangelo, whatever. They're playing inside of the system, and oftentimes, sometimes, when you're defending as the Golden Knights do, it's a give and take on when you do or don't kill a play. If you are going to get it, you go and kill it. If you're not going to get it, then you cede that area of the ice because it's not in a dangerous spot, and you're just okay to pack the middle of the ice. But what I notice out of Hanifin, and I'm not sure if this is just playing on instinct or whether or not this will change over time as he gets more comfortable and more of a feel of the system. This guy wants to kill plays so that he can start transition the other way. He wants to go into the corner, out-muscle a guy, take the puck, and go in transition. And you saw it on that play because, again, oftentimes, if your gap, if you don't trust it, if you don't trust that back pressure, if you don't trust that reload, you're going to back off. You're going to cede the blue line. And Hanifin didn't do it there. And his desire to kill that play leads immediately to offense for the Golden Knights. And I think that's an aspect of the game that's been missing from the defensemen, from the forwards. You cannot have good gaps at the blue line in the neutral zone if you don't have that back pressure, and that's been an aspect that's been missing from the Golden Knights.
So much of that is predicated on instinct, confidence,
absolutely,
and
100%.
Skill, because this is a guy who doesn't really even know the system all that well. Although, I asked him the other night after the game about how easy the transition is when you're very familiar with the Golden Knights, and he said, obviously, you see this team enough, and he said they play a pretty similar system.
It's not far off.
Up in Calgary. Yeah. So the transition for him was fairly easy based on what he said. So certainly that's something that another reason why you look at this trade and you're like, wow.
And I think
it was a good move.
I think he'll get the red light to do or the green light to do it more. Yeah. I really do.
If he can do it, why would you not? Why would you hold that back?
Now, Anthony Manta. Couple of games for him. There have been moments in the offensive zone where the puck finds him in really good spots.
Yeah.
There have been some smart passes that he's made, some extended zone time. One aspect that I've been pleasantly surprised with Manta is there's a willingness on his part to go out and hit.
Yeah.
There's a willingness on his part to go out and check, and that's not a massive part of his game, or at least it hasn't been for him at this level before. He is a big body. He is more direct. He's speedy for sure, but he's not Will Carrier in that he's direct and he'll bowl through you. He'll dance around you, but he'll go to the front of the net. He's hard to move for sure, but he's not going to be overly physical. There's been a little bit more of that in his game over the first two here in Vegas.
Yeah, he's got a little similarity to Alex Tuck in that regard. And I mean, their game is a little bit different, but both big men. Both games predicated on speed, not the most overly physical, right? They're not that prototypical power forward as you would describe some of the bigger guys who use their bodies a little bit more. The one thing about Mantha that I've noticed is it's only a matter of time. Like, it seems like it's clicking.
Puck's finding him.
Yeah, and you can see that there certainly is a tremendous upside to his game. Look, I hope on this road trip, he finds the back of the net because I think for him he'll really like that, and maybe it's something that gets him going. Because look, this team, as I mentioned in the first segment, I think I need to see some more depth scoring from them. And while I wouldn't consider him a quote depth guy, certainly you want to get him going for this final stretch of regular season games.
Pavel Dorofeev in the lineup. You
love
mentioned
it. He
love scored.
Him. Yes.
We have talked about him slippery in the offensive zone. He played with Stevenson. And Mantha, I'm interested to see what direction you go as you get healthier, right? The expectation from Bruce Cassidy earlier today is that Brett Howden will play tomorrow.
Okay.
That's huge, right? Like, that's big. You talk about, again, character guy, played for the Golden Knights in the postseason, has familiarity with Chandler Stephenson. If Anthony Mantha is kind of your Mark Stone proxy, then you are probably going to go with Howden, Stephenson, Mantha as a line. Okay.
So, you know, I was thinking you would put, at least tomorrow, you would put Howden on the fourth line.
So here's the thing. I don't think you do that because I think you're trying to provide an opportunity, competition, whatever you want to call it, between Pavel Dorofeev and Paul Cotter. Paul Cotter, right now, present moment, his game is best suited for what line?
Fourth line, probably. Fourth line,
right? Like, and that's not a knock on him.
No.
This team, the Vegas Golden Knights, this team largely won a Stanley Cup because you have players on your fourth line that aren't fourth line players, but embrace the role.
Yes.
Nick Waugh, I'm looking at you. William Carrier, to a degree, I'm looking at you. And I guess that's my point. If you look at Paul Cotter and what he brings to the table, there's physicality to his game. He's a strong guy. He is a power forward. He has hands. He's got touch, but it's not dropping at the rate you'd like it to if he was a third line middle six player. It's going to get you what you need if he's on your fourth line.
Yes.
His game skill set is best suited alongside a player like Nick Waugh on your fourth line.
So that leads to the question. You would play Dorofeev alongside Carlson and Amadio.
Carrier's not tracking for tomorrow.
Right.
Carrier's tracking more Thursday, maybe beyond that. We'll see
what happens. Yeah.
He was on the ice today, looked good. Believe me, he looked good. But you want to get Carrier back in the fold as quickly
right.
as possible.
But you don't want to. I like when Bruce Cassidy says, look, when a guy's ready, he's ready.
Yeah,
and he's
100%.
Playing. He's going to play his allotted time. So they'll play William Carrier when he's ready. But tomorrow night, I think I could see Howden slotting up alongside Stephenson and Mantha. But I could also see Howden playing on the fourth line. And you leave Dorofeev. I mean, I guess maybe you could play Cotter on the second.
Here's my point. Pavel Dorofeev's great.
I don't think he's coming out of the lineup.
He's not as versatile as Paul Cotter.
No, but I think
that's the difference in the players.
But I think he gives you more offensive upside.
My point being, if you look at tomorrow's game, I'm not going to be surprised if it's Dorofeev, Carlson, Amadio.
I think that's fair.
Because that's where I think his skill set best suits this team. I just do.
He's got a guy like Carlson who could put him give him the puck in those little spots that he likes to get to.
If you need someone to play up your lineup, Paul Cotter's your guy. Yeah. So is Pavel Dorofeev. If you need a guy on your fourth line,
it's
Paul Cotter. It's not Pavel Dorofeev.
Right.
The question is, what do the Golden Knights need? And can Paul Cotter do what Pavel Dorofeev does in that third line role? Meaning, can Cotter finish more of his opportunities? Can he generate more of those chances at a higher degree than Pavel Dorofeev when he's playing alongside Carlson and Amadio? That's the question you have to answer.
Well, I think what I look at is the fact that in basically half the games, Pavel Dorofeev has one more goal than Paul Cotter.
It's going to be a trial by fire. It's going to be a competition down the stretch.
Well, I like the idea that you have the option to interchange based on who you're playing the particular night.
All things being equal, everyone's healthy. Your fourth line is Carrier, Waugh, and Kolesar, right?
Correct. Right.
You're not changing that.
Nope. That's written in stone.
There's no way around. You want to talk about identity?
That's the identity.
Of this team, it's always been.
Yeah.
Fourth line.
You go back to year one.
Always. Start games, start periods, set the tone. That's what they do.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, can you get more out of Dorofeev than Cotter, or more out of Cotter than Dorofeev, slotting alongside Carlson and Amadio? It's always been, what's the fit on the third line? As much as we look at the fourth and say, that's always been the identity, the question for the Golden Knights with the third line has always been, what is it? What's that identity? How do you make it work?
Well, I mean, it took them a long time to be able to find an identity for that third line.
Sure.
I mean, we're talking years. I mean, we could go through some of the players that we had seen and it just didn't work. They finally have, I would say, the most balanced lineup that they've had in their history.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to last year, and it's carried over. Obviously, the injuries this year have kind of deflated some of what you had there on the third line. But I think it's an advantage for the Golden Knights over a lot of other teams because I don't think a lot of other teams around the league are having this type of conversation.
Probably not. But then again, a lot of other teams around the league are going to complain about LTIR, too.
I don't care what they complain about.
I don't either. Yeah. So I don't think you're changing anything with your top line or your fourth line. I think your middle six is what you're looking at here. And then Tomáš Hertl throws another wrinkle into that. When Hertl's available, and he said that he feels comfortable after his procedure, that he feels like he's ahead of schedule, everything's moving in the right direction, feels like he's going to be able to skate hopefully in the next couple of weeks or so. The expectation is he plays before the end of the regular season. If he's going to be on the wing, whether he's going to be down the middle, whether he's going to be essentially what Bruce Cassidy always likes to do, and that's have two centers on every single line. If you can do that, great. My guess is you're probably looking at Stevenson, Hertl, Mantha.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm not even introducing the idea of Mark Stone because I don't know what the future holds for Mark Stone right now. Beyond the regular season, I don't know.
Yeah.
As much as everybody wants to pretend like they do know,
including
I don't know.
Pundits, yeah. They all seem to know, right?
So I if that's the case, then you have another player right there in Brett Howden.
Yeah.
You quite literally, Chapman, could have a player that played meaningful hockey in a Stanley Cup championship run in Brett Howden be in a spot where...
Scored a big goal.
We're not sure where that fit is. Because you could have Howden, Carlson, Amadio. You want to talk about a shutdown line? Like, if that's the direction you go,
mm-hmm.
that might be what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the idea that you could, in theory, set up game one of the playoffs...
Mm-hmm.
Without Pavel Dorofeev, without Paul Cotter in the lineup.
Without two of the following three players.
Yeah. We have Brett Howden.
Howden, Cotter, Dorofeev.
Because certainly I think Michael Amadio has earned a spot. But he's another guy.
It's hard to argue.
But he's another guy where based on the situation,
mm-hmm.
you could maybe put someone else in there if you have to.
But then there's the versatility, right?
Right.
Like the Amadio question becomes, okay. What do you do if Mark Stone becomes healthy middle of the playoffs?
Yeah.
Where do you go there? Because then all of a sudden, where it wasn't before, the right side of your lineup up front, how do you make those decisions?
Yeah, and I think anyone who listens to this show knows I'm a big Mike Amadio fan. So I think the idea that even he could slot out
mm-hmm.
is unfathomable to me, that this team could be so deep that a guy like that who scored 16 goals for you last year in the regular season,
mm-hmm.
scored a game-winning goal in double overtime in Winnipeg,
mm-hmm.
scored a goal in the Stanley Cup final, the final game,
yeah.
could slot out. He's probably going to end up with 15 goals this year.
And the whole point of this exercise isn't to talk about the players that might come out of the lineup. It's to underscore how deep the Golden Knights are now because of what Kelly McCrimmon was able to do at the trade deadline. It is one thing to go out there, swing your bat for the fences three times, connect all three times. It is another thing to do it without taking anything off your roster. So many times we see, to trade for a player like Noah Hanifin, you've got to give something up right now that's tangible that you can use in the National Hockey League. And Daniil Miromanov, to a degree, is that, but he's not a guy that's going to be in your lineup night in and night out for this Golden Knights team when their defense is healthy.
Well, and the thing is, I have a really hard time figuring out where he would have been in the overall depth chart. 9?
I mean, with Hanifin coming back?
Yeah.
Like, with Hanifin coming back, Alec Martinez is 7.
Yeah.
Ben Hutton is 8.
Ben Hutton's 8 and Caden Korzak's 9.
So you're talking about 10, 11 maybe.
Yeah. Lucas Cormier's figuring in as well. So, like, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you're like, okay.
And so when you build a championship team on depth and then you win on depth and then you have that depth challenged during the course of the regular season, it provides context clues as to what you need in order to get back there. The Golden Knights going into the postseason. Now, again, nothing's guaranteed they have to get there. This might be the best collection of talent at every position the Golden Knights have ever had.
I don't think there's any doubt that this could be.
And
I think it is.
Like, if Hurdle is a center for you, then you've got Eichel, you've got Hurdle, you've got Stevenson, you've got Carlson, you've got Waugh, and you've got Howden. That is six legitimate NHL centers. Legit. And yeah. I'm not talking about like, maybe.
No,
legitimate.
They are. Yeah.
Any other team, they're in the lineup night in and night
like
out.
Like Brett Howden won a Stanley Cup. He's legitimate.
Yes.
He's a legitimate NHL center.
100%. You're going to have at least two of those guys playing on the wing.
God.
Chapman, if they get into the postseason, and again, wild card spot, I'm not concerned about it, but I know there's so many fans that are right now. This might be the deepest collection of talent the Golden Knights have had going into a postseason at every single position.
I mean, look.
Centers, wingers, defensemen. Deepest they've ever been.
Yeah, and I don't think fans should be stressing about the playoffs. They're in. They've got some runway before I would start worrying. I'm not too concerned. I think it's one of those things where they'll find a way to get in.
Yeah.
I don't care if they're the 7 or the 8. It doesn't matter to me. They're fine. Like, this isn't 2 years ago. You're starting to get healthy at the right time, whereas 2 years ago, there was no real what's the word? There was no sun coming up on the other side of the horizon, it seemed like. Whereas this year, it seems like, all right.
It feels like the light at the end of the tunnel's right there.
Yeah, things are progressing the way you'd want them to.
Still, I would say not knowing what the true timeline is on Mark Stone, because that's unknowable. Like, Kelly McCrimmon confirmed it last week. Lacerated spleen. We've all Googled it. We've all looked into it. Who knows what that timeline is? Individual recovery may vary. Period. Full stop. So with that being said, you have to not only set yourself up to make the playoffs, but you've got to set yourself up with the right talent around you to win in the playoffs if you don't get Mark Stone back. And I think that's what the Golden Knights have done. They've doubled down on depth. And right now, when you start to think about what things might progress for or toward when you have Carrier and Howden and all of those players back in the fold, it should get you excited if you're a Golden Knights fan. It just should. And I hope it does. Chapman, we have tickets to give away, right?
We do.
What's the game?
It is the crack, Seattle Kraken on Thursday, the 21st.
Okay, if you want to go see the Vegas Golden Knights and the Seattle Kraken, 702-876-1340, be caller number 20. One-timers. That's next on the VGK Insider Show.
The puck and flurry to the pitch.
How about this move here?
Wow.
I mean,
they need every point banger.
Yeah, they do.
Empty net for Minnesota in a 3-3 game in overtime. Kaprizov extending the shift. How about this move from John Hines to get four attackers out there? Four forwards in all. Zuccarello from the circle.
Holy jumping. What great execution.
Carlson left corner. Centered. One-timer. Score!
It's time for One-Timers.
One-Timers.
A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery.
One-Timers. News and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery. Since Chapman played the audio, we'll start there. The Minnesota Wild, and this is really hard, right? Because John Hines used to coach the Nashville Predators, so now I'm sitting here trying to second guess myself. Wait a minute, who does he coach now? Oh yeah, it's the Wild. So Wild coach John Hines, you just heard it on the clip, pulled his goaltender in overtime Saturday against Predators. He did this knowing full well that if the Predators would have scored an empty net goal in overtime, the Wild would not have gotten the loser point for getting the game to extra time. Hines did this because he said, quote, we're trying to win and we need every point. So they were able to cut the lead that Nashville has on them to 9 points, leapfrogged a couple of teams to gamble for sure. Here's my only issue with the rule. I understand that the team pulling their goaltender is assuming all the risk, and they will give back that point if the game ends going back the other way with an empty net goal. Somebody asked me, do you like this strategy? No, I don't. I don't. Unless you're the only team that gets 2 points. Meaning, if the Minnesota Wild, by virtue of pulling their goaltender and taking on that gamble, that risk, determining to the entire world that they were there to win, not to collect loser points, if in so doing they took away the loser point from Nashville, I'd be all about it.
Yeah.
It should be that way.
It should be, because John Hines is the only one really going for it.
100%.
Like the aspect that I think we don't get from that clip is that he did it with a minute and 30 seconds to go in overtime.
Yeah.
Or they scored with a minute and 30 seconds going overtime.
2 minutes.
So in reality, he really took a gamble there, because for 3.5 minutes, you weren't getting anything going.
Yeah.
By the way, does Marc-Andre Fleury get the win in that game because they scored with an empty net?
Did he come in relief?
Well, the game was tied in overtime. I think he started the game.
If he started the game, he gets the win.
He gets the win.
Yeah, he gets the win. Okay.
Even though he wasn't on the ice for the winner.
No.
Okay.
It's fine.
Hey, every win counts at that point when you're as high up on the wins list as him.
All I'm saying, though, is like, if you recognize as a team that that's what the stakes are, like if you can steal a point away from a team that you're chasing by pulling your goaltender and winning the game, that's how it should be. The point should be up for grabs on both sides.
Yeah. Would you take it a step further and the team that does pull the goalie and wins the game gets the loser point on top of the 2 points?
No. No, I mean, I would just do a 3-2-1-0
you get,
point
so,
system.
So Nashville gets 0 points in that.
Generally speaking, yeah, 100%. But that being said, again, my larger point is, I understand it, I appreciate and respect John Hines for doing it. One team was trying to win that game. One team.
Yeah.
So that team should get both points. That's all I have to say.
The biggest issue I've had with overtime for years is sometimes you get teams that are just fine skating it out and going to the shootout.
Yep.
They don't want to risk losing the game in OT, so they'll skate with the puck. And like, I think with some tweaks, overtime in hockey could be the best thing in the world.
Yep. I agree with you. All right, moving on. Paul Bissonnette. Openly questions the Vegas Golden Knights, LTIR, the National Hockey League to a degree. Legitimacy of injuries, all of that. On TNT. The NHL on TNT, Paul Bissonnette. Among the highlights, said that if Stone comes back for the postseason, then the Golden Knights should be investigated by the league. Oh, by the way, Paul, that already happens. Not investigation, but you know who has to sign off on these things?
The league.
The league. So they've done that. Next point. Question the cyclical nature of Mark Stone's injuries. I'm sorry, Paul, didn't get a lot of minutes in the National Hockey League, but when you play a lot, you leave yourself open to the opportunity that you might get hurt. And it's happened for Mark Stone. If anyone's sitting there legitimately right now believing that the Golden Knights wouldn't rather have Mark Stone, their captain, their best player, their emotional leader on the ice while they are chasing down a playoff spot, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. No amount of LTIR cap space is going to replace what Mark Stone brings on a daily basis. He said that if Stone's back for the playoffs, the Golden Knights will have a team on the ice $10 million over the cap. See, here's another misconception about the Vegas Golden Knights last year. even though Mark Stone came back for game one of the playoffs, if you go back and you look at the roster night in and night out for the Golden Knights, especially and including game five of the Stanley Cup championship, wouldn't you know it, Chris Chapman, that lineup was cap compliant. Even though the cap doesn't exist in the postseason, and everyone wants to believe in this world where the cap does exist in the postseason, it doesn't. But if it did, the Golden Knights would be compliant there. And then he doubled down and said that if Stone comes back, it's, quote, suspicious. Here's the thing. The Golden Knights are operating within the rules. If you lose a player that makes $9.5 million, it fundamentally changes who your team is. Kelly McCrimmon was on the Jeff Merrick show earlier today, and he said, if I'm not trying to make my team better in that stretch, I'm not doing my job. This is what every general manager that has LTIR, that has a player that's out for the season, every single one should be doing the exact same thing that the Vegas Golden Knights are doing. And by the way, a lot of teams right now are. Second point. I mentioned it earlier. The Golden Knights roster last year in the postseason was cap compliant. Don't believe me? Look it up. Come at me with something different. Seriously. And Paul, you work for TNT. You are an ambassador of this league. It is gross. Questioning the legitimacy of player injuries.
Yeah, a guy who played the game.
Which, last one here, you claim. Spitting chiclets. We talked about it at the beginning of the year with Mike Babcock. You're a player podcast. Players tell you things. Don't mess with the players. Does that include you? Paul? Because it seems to me that a player podcast that's out for the goodwill of the players shouldn't be sitting there questioning, throwing conspiracy theories out there about a very real, a very serious, and very legitimate injury. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'll just say, I'm guessing Paul Bissonnette knows Mark Stone. Maybe not to a great extent, but I'm guessing he knows him somewhat. The idea that he would question Mark Stone and a lacerated spleen, which, by the way, could kill you, it's ridiculous. And I get you want clicks and you want people to tune in and listen, but if I'm Kelly McCrimmon, the first thing I'm doing is telling every player in my organization, you're not going on that podcast.
No, done.
You're not giving that guy any oxygen.
Period.
It's nonsense. This is a guy who played the game, questioning an injury, questioning players being injured. The idea that Mark Stone, who you and I mean, look, we don't know him on a personal level, but we've known Mark Stone for 5 years, six
lives
years.
And breathes hockey.
This is his life.
Yeah.
It's like family to him.
It is family.
These guys that he's playing with are his brothers.
Do you remember the press conference when he came back at the beginning of the playoffs last year?
Oh, yeah.
I did everything in my power. I didn't know that I was going to get back here, but this is where I belong. This is what I am born to do, and I don't want to miss this.
The idea that Mark Stone is willing to basically affect the quality of his life when he's done playing hockey to win a Stanley Cup, I think that says a lot right there about how much that Mark Stone loves this game. How many guys are coming back with two back surgeries in 1 year? Not a lot. A lot of guys.
I know it's trendy to be outraged by LTIR. I know it's trendy to be mad at a thing that's literally collectively bargained by the ownership, the general manager.
What was it, 31-1 they voted to have this system in place?
Yeah, listen, stop complaining about it. When half the league is in LTI, stop complaining about it. Bring the same energy when Gabe Landeskog is available at some point in the playoffs. You won't.
No, because they hate Vegas.
And it's ridiculous. But again, I'm not going to sit here and listen to a rights holder of the league call out an organization and a player and question whether or not this is suspicious when it's been signed off on by the league, because there's no way the Golden Knights would be in this position if the league didn't look at it didn't confirm the injury that Mark Stone sustained. And in that, in so doing that, questioning that at all is gross.
You're questioning the integrity of the league.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Uncalled for.
That's your shtick, I guess. Those are your one-timers for today, Monday, March 11th. Catching up with Chapman is next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
All right, Ryan, well, first day of NFL free agency, and it certainly starts with a bang. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the New York Giants, Philadelphia Eagles rivalry, but I would say it's probably on par with Montreal-Toronto times 100, separated only by the New Jersey Turnpike, short 90-minute drive between the two stadiums and teams. So when one player leaves one of the organizations and goes to the other, it's a pretty big deal.
Okay.
But today, Saquon Barkley, who was a star for the New York Giants, star running back, one of the most popular players in the franchise, hit free agency, and he signed with the hated Philadelphia Eagles. And Giant fans not happy. I grew up around a ton of them. Friends of mine, Saquon Barkley shirts in the trash, setting them on fire. Like the usual of what you would expect.
Yeah.
Tiki Barber, former New York Giant running back, apparently said that Saquon Barkley is dead to him.
Wow.
For leaving the Giants and going to play for the hated Eagles. And I'm trying
That's strong.
I'm trying to think if, like, it would almost be like when Joe Pavelski was a free agent, if he would have left San Jose and come to Vegas, right? Because it would have been right at the height.
So it's like, it's like Tomas Hertl's a Golden Knight times 1,000.
Yes, but the difference is San Jose traded Tomas Hertl. Okay. Saquon Barkley willingly left the New York Giants and went to go.
It's his right to do it.
It is. It is. And, you know, he played at Penn State. He doesn't want to move his family. The money was really good, obviously.
Probably wants to win.
Yeah, well, the Giants haven't done a whole lot of that. So,
that's what I'm saying. Like,
I can't blame Saquon Barkley, but I think it's funny because my friends who are Giant fans have completely melted down. Me as a New York Jet fan, I never will know what that's like because my team sucks.
Yeah.
They will forever stink. But it's funny to see them have to go through some of the emotions that I've gone through as a Jet fan when players have left. You're like, oh, God, really? Ugh. But I can't think of too many players who've left and gone to play for teams that I've hated the way Giant fans hate the Eagles. No star players have done that.
Tomas Hertl's a Vegas Golden Knight. Great quote. Fun guy.
Yeah, I like him.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I really like him. I like him a lot.
VGK Insider Show and pre-intermission post at Sierra Gold Jones and the 215 tomorrow. Come on by and say hello. I'll see.